Good afternoon, everyone. Hopefully, I appreciate someone coming. This is always good. When we talk about the Palo Verde Valley, and this kind of goes along with some of the questions people are asking, the Palo Verde Valley is in the far southeastern corner of Riverside County. And Riverside County is the one that's highlighted here. And the star there is where Palo Verde Valley is. It's not a big valley, but it's basically where all the cotton is grown for the most part now in southeastern California. Right across the river to the east of us is La Paz County, Arizona, and they grow some cotton right adjacent to us as well. And if you look at this from the sky, here's what we see, the Palo Verde Valley. We've got Phoenix to the east of us, LA to the west of us, and that's Interstate 10 cutting right through everything right there. And right here is kind of the here's the Colorado River. So you got Arizona here, California there, and here's Arizona back here. So a lot of the growers and PCAs are the same on both sides. As you can see, this is an isolated area. And being in the desert, it can be warm. But with the isolation, we don't have a lot of the pests. So it's kind of like a unique situation. It's probably 90 miles in any direction, north, south, or west, to get anywhere to the next town in California. So we are isolated. We're about 90 miles away from everybody else. One of the things about that part of the country is we have warm temperatures. And we're in the desert, it's very warm. And as you can see, as we look across here from May through August, you can see our temperatures, once you get to about the 1st of July, our average high every day is 108. And our average lows are pushing 80. So we have some nice heat stress situations in the summertime. And if we look at that though, all that heat is fantastic for making things grow. If you look at our cotton yields across the country, here's our top 10 counties across the nation. And you'll see over here on your far left, that's Riverside County. We happen to be the number one as far as yields go per county in the United States. This is from in 2016. That particular year, this valley averaged a little over 5 bale an acre. And if you look at the 5-year average, we have over here at Riverside, and then part of our valley covers Imperial. You'll see those are basically the top two in the nation because of the Palo Verde Valley and the yields that we have there. So it's a very high production area. But when we have the potential for high yield, we also have the potential for greatest crop loss. Now, some of the talks this morning talked a little bit about fruit retention, and this is some work that was done by the University of Arizona where they did some things in growth chambers. And as you go across from left to right, look at the difference in fruit retention between 79 and 81 degrees. A big drop of almost 20% retention. And as you get to 87 and 93, it falls way off. Not only that, but look at the size of the bowls up there in that top right corner, and you'll see the bowls are also smaller with a higher heat. So we have less retention and smaller bowls. If the University of Arizona has done a really good job with looking at heat stress, and they've kind of come up with two levels of heat stress, one being level one, where the mean county temperature does not get below 82.4 in the day. And then the level two stress is when it doesn't reach below 86. And so a lot of the cottons we look at in the desert are pretty good for that level one stress, but they're pretty susceptible to level two stresses. So if we look at what's happening with that physiological sequence, you have a big heat event that leads to free radicals being produced. Those free radicals then signal for ethylene production. Ethylene production then signals for abscisic acid. And then abscisic acid causes the abortion of developing flowers and bowls, and you get something that looks like this on the ground. Lots of things can fall, and you'll see developing squares and sometimes some small bowls that will actually abort and fall off. Generally, with our constant temperatures that we have, we can generally see after a level two heat stress, we can see the ground just littered about 13 days later. We haven't done a really good job of really seeing what that sequence is. It may be a bit shorter, it may be a longer, because a lot of times we have more than just one night of a heat two, a level two heat stress. So if we look at this, here's what we're seeing. In the valley, it's actually a little bit cooler than this because it's at the National Weather Service, so it's up a little higher. But if we look at some of our temperatures in 2017, you can see in June, we had some temperatures down in the valley, 115, 114. Nighttime lows were reaching close to 80 degrees at night. When we put the average temperature together, the canopy temperature for the day, we had a 7-day window in there that everyone had at least a level one heat stress for a 7-day period in June. Okay? And if we look at that, what followed on that, we saw that three of those nights had level two heat stress. The 22nd, the 25th, the 26th. And then following that, in July, we had heat stress on 29 of 31 nights. This is not unusual. We have a lot of heat stress in the desert. It's one of those things that happens. And so if we look at this, those early heat losses in June, because that's right in our primary cycle of bloom, and then the July, which is our secondary bloom period, they caused us a pretty good yield loss. Growers are telling me in this particular year, 2017, they figured heat stress cost them at least 2 bales an acre. So it's substantial. So if we think about the physiology of what's happening, we know that the sequence, remember we're talking about radicals, and if the radicals aren't silenced by free calcium in the plant, and there's not too much free calcium that's tied up in the cell walls and everything, that will signal for ethylene. But if you think about what signals for ethylene, it's ACC-ACE. You go back and look at the literature, what can stop ethylene production in plants? Well, there's a couple of compounds that actually can do it. One of them is silver. But I don't think our cotton growers are really able to afford to spray silver on their crops. If they could, well, you know, good for them. My growers can't. The other aspect of this is cobalt. Cobalt also interferes with ACCAs, and there's people nodding their heads back there, so people are aware of this. So I took that knowledge, I reached out to about 3 or 4 different chemical companies to see who had cobalt in their fertilizers. And one of them did get back to me. They had some and they provided. And this case was a Stoller product called BioHold. We also used that with HarvestMore, had a little bit into it as well. If you look at the BioHold, it's got some nitrogen, it's got some K2O, it's got some 2.5% chelated cobalt, some molybdenum. It also has two antioxidant compounds in it as well. We combine that with the HarvestMore. It's got a little dab of cobalt, 0.008%. as well as some other things, just to see what would happen. And then we also looked at another product of theirs, some calcium and boron, because the calcium might provide a little bit of advantage as well. So if we look at this, we had two different treatment timings. We looked at the June, that May and June window, the early, and then we looked at this again in late. So we looked at the early session, about 3 applications of these products, about 10 days apart. And then again in mid-season. And the treatments we had, in addition to the check, we had 2 treatments. We had BioHold at 8 ounces, plus the HarvestMore ureamate. And then the other treatment was also adding the crop mix. So let's see what happened. We had 3 to 4 applications or replications in each field, randomized complete block. And if we look at this year, we're seeing in mid-June, pretty good size situation. Things are well flowered at that point in time. And if you look at our plots, we used large grower plots. We worked with the growers. Reason being, why do we use large plots? Some are 18 rows wide, many of them are 24. Ethylene is a gas, and it will move back and forth. So to negate the possibility of small plots and gas movement, we went with large, wide plots. So these are strip trials across the fields, and you can see we're seeing some kind of cool coverage there. You can see from flag to flag just how wide that is. In June, it's looking a little bit more like this as we're coming across. And we had really good application and didn't have much drift. We were happy with that. So let's talk about 2018. Let's get to the crux of what we were talking about today. So it's one of those things where We thought we might have heat stress in June. In 2018, we had no heat stress. But during July and August, we had 51 nights out of those 62 days with heat stress, okay? But we didn't have our first level 2 heat stress until July 7th. And then if we look at that from the 22nd of July through the 26th, we had 13 consecutive nights with level 2 heat stress and 15 out of 17. Now, one thing I want to also let you know is that even though we had 3 applications of all those treatments, you know, 3 early, 3 late, 2 of the fields, don't ask me how, end up with 2,4-DB injury in June. But it didn't come from the first application, but it came from the second one. And if we look at that 2,4-DB injury, we had strips of the field looking like this. We weren't sure what was going to happen for harvest, but we got some data, so we're going to show that with you as well. So if this is a busy slide, our yellow line right here is our level 1 heat stress. Okay, so you can see where we are. Our red bar, or red line, excuse me, is our level 2 heat stress. And if you look at our heat stress nights, here's this kind of green bar going up and down, and you can see where we had heat stress during July and August. Now, we have 3 different lines up here for the fields, okay? So we have site number 3 right here. That's one application there. Here's site 2 had an application, and here's another application. If we look at our last application, going into the heat units or heat stress, I think that's the most interesting thing about this because it was really the telling thing about this. If we look at our last application for site 3, here it is. Site 1, about 2 days later, and we'll look and see what happens with the heat stress. It kind of really fell down. And then over here is our heat stress last application at site number 2. And it's after some heat stress, but really into the crux of the heat stress. So let's take a look at those yields, okay? Okay, so this is the earliest of those last 3 applications. And you can see over here on the left where we put the bio hold, we actually had a little bit less yield than the check. We had the crop mix to it, it helped, but remember, this is one of those fields that had some herbicide damage. I apologize, this field, we relied on the yield monitor, and where we really would have liked to have the data from that midpoint, our middle application, it failed every single plot. Welcome to field research. So some of these are 1, some of these are 3. So we'll take this one with a grain of salt. If we look at our other site, this one had no herbicide damage. So here's our biohold by itself, biohold plus crop mix. Early, no effect. Late, however, we're seeing a nice response, about a third of a bale increase in yield, average yield versus the check where we add the crop mix. It didn't help it. If I look at our last spot, again, herbicide damage here, where we had the crop mix, kind of offset that herbicide damage. Here was really interesting is if we look at this, kind of the same thing we saw before, but this situation, 0.55 of a bale yield increase. So it's not too bad. Again, this one was a little over 5 bale cotton. It wasn't too bad. The grower wasn't kind of upset because only got 5, but that's just the way it goes, and it was kind of interesting. So as we come to our conclusions here, what we're seeing in this case, we're seeing with the biohold, in this case, it did result in some increased lint yields. but in that July period, but not in June when we had no heat stress. And our largest yield increase came as we get more and more into that heat stress, telling us that maybe these things don't last for a really, really long time within the plant. We need to do some more research on that just to see, but we're not seeing a week or 2 weeks worth of activity. So it's kind of interesting looking at that. And again, you can see our yields here. The red bar is what we're looking at, the biohold by itself. It's kind of interesting. If we look at this as well, where we add the crop mix, we actually reduce the yields by adding the crop mix to the biohold. It happened in all 3 sites late and in this early site as well. But where we had the crop mix, it did seem to offset some of that herbicide injury. So those are some interesting things that we're seeing with this study. We've got some more studies going on this year. We just got done picking last week. I don't have a lot of good yield data for that yet, but I can tell you where this year we looked at the biohold with a couple different rates, and there's definitely a rate response, and we didn't start this year till almost the middle of July to apply. So it's looking very encouraging. I think we might have something out there that can at least offset some heat stress, but there's a lot more work to be done. And with that, I need to thank Stoller for providing some the product and some financial assistance to make this happen, as well as my Gore cooperators who were listed as authors. So at this point in time, I don't know if there's any questions, but I'll be glad to try to answer some. Yes, sir. All right, the question was it better yields or better more bulls? I can tell you, we stopped plant mapping at the end of July because my helpers were going back to college and we're already at 25 nodes at that point in time. We still had a long season to go. But I can tell you that where we, in the small field, or where we had the 3,300s or a third of a bale increase, we were seeing one more bull for every so many feet a row. So we were picking up a little bit more bull retention at that point in time. But if you've been once you get past about August, you cannot walk out in the crops anymore because they're basically trees, and you can't get through it, not by yourself. And growers didn't want us to really drive through things very much because we were going to do more damage than good. But we do know we have some small mid-season data, at least end of July, where we were seeing an uptick in bull retention from one field. And the other one, I'll have to go back and look. But I don't know, we did not look at bull sizes. So I don't know about that. The question is, what are we shedding? Are we shedding things that are more than 10 days old? I don't know that we are. I think it's it's mostly flowers, not necessarily bulls. We'll see a few bulls, but it's mostly flowers. Good question. Thank you. Yes. I think cobalt is one of the players in this. I'm certain of it because we've done things with other products and haven't had it, and we know from the literature that cobalt is involved. So cobalt, to me, is a big player. Now, the two antioxidants that are in there, I don't know, or anti-stress type products are in this with it. I'm not exactly sure what they are or what they do. I don't know. It comes out as a really dark blue compound.
It's not brown.
No, it's not brown. So I doubt that. Yeah. I doubt that. Yes, sir. It's in the literature. It's not a new thing, but it's nice to be able to apply it and get some positive results from it. And now, don't ask me about the economics. I can't tell you that. And we'll see what happens this year. We apply it about 10 days apart, three times. But that's for next year. That's for next year. Yes, Bob. The The question was, do we think the fertilizer mode is going to be the best way to get cobalt and the most inexpensive? Probably. I don't know where else are you going to get cobalt. There's an answer in the back. Yes, sir. Go ahead. For 500 points, yes. I'm excited about it because we have something that looks like it works. It sounds like there's some other products out there as well we should be looking at. So I'm excited for my growers in the desert, at least. Are there any other questions?
So the effect seems to be transient, maybe about 2 weeks is what we were talking about. How long prior to when stress event should we be thinking about applying this product?
The question was, how far in advance of a stress event should we be applying it? I think since it lasts so short, we should need to time it maybe not before, but maybe after, because maybe several days after a heat event. Reason being, if you think about the sequence, you have the antioxidants, and they have to do their thing before they kick in the ACCase, which produces the ethylene. So I'm thinking very closely timed to it, maybe a day or two behind. Makes more sense than a week or two in advance, because a week or two in advance, we saw with the one field here where we planted early, we didn't necessarily see, we didn't see the results because we didn't get the yield results, but I don't know that we saw a yield increase, but I can't say that as a fact, based on the fact that we had no data for that point. But as it seemed like we went further and further into it, where we had the heat stress and there was some benefit, but we saw no benefit really from it at all when there was no heat stress. Yes, sir.
Did you take for the capability for wild cages and tissue samples post application to better understand uptake and uptake uniformity and efficiency? Do you think you would be able to see anything in a tissue sample?
Are you talking as a cobalt? It probably would be good to do that just to see what the levels are, but I don't know how many labs we have close by that can do that. He's shaking his head back there. He seems to
That's a problem with most labs don't test for it. It was an added cost and substantial. Also, cobalt is not as heat residues can be a pretty big issue, especially in the desert where you have a very low or high endpoint. The question is, right, it's going to take on there immediately. It's going to have residues left in the heat that are not actually providing a plant effect. So,
Good point. I can tell you from this year looking at, we looked at two different rates of the biohold this year, and I could see at harvest there was a rate response. So that tells me that we're getting more in, so it's having an effect. Yes, Bob.
What kind of temperatures were there at the time of application? Well, the reason why I'm asking is this one of those products sort of like you were doing a REA application where more effective and maybe in terms of uptake?
Well, you can kind of see what our air temperatures were here on these days. Some of the days were 80, 89 for the lows, and we were applying it like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning to beat the heat. So we're doing it extremely early in the morning where winds would be, or lack of winds, because things would be calm. So we're doing it very early in the morning, right after daybreak. Any other questions? I appreciate everyone's comments and thanks for chiming in. That's how we all learn, so thank you very much.